different people have different points of view. When it comes to creation versus evolution, my point of view, we were created to evolve. The Red Pill, every Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern in Studio B. www.freedomslips.com and revolution.radio. Check it out.
People's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We gotta stop them! They're gonna kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone, or human beings!
Starting on the operation of the machine.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Right, you tell them I'm coming!
Here we go, hour one. And greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooke Zagnew, coming to you live from an undisclosed location east of the Appalachian Mountains. This is where the past meets the future. In here, the results are always positive. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. So glad you could be here with us tonight. Restream is going through some upgrades tonight. Some of the things are working. Some of the things are not working. We're not sure why. Obviously, some of the streams are working. I don't know if anybody can see me or not, but it's obvious YouTube and let's see, DLive and Rockfin and Rumble and Facebook can see me, as well as Foxhole. So not really sure why Restream is blank, but we'll live with it tonight. So, got a little bit of tickle in the throat. We'll make it through tonight. I have a lot of stuff to go over with you tonight. Last weekend was not on Sunday, live because I was at the Reawakening Tour in Phoenix, Arizona. That was really a great event. You know, have you ever been to a fireworks show? And normally the fireworks show starts with, you know, a boom here and a boom there. And over the next hour or so, as it gets darker, you get more and more little combinations going. This wasn't like that. This was opening with the finale, and it stayed there for two solid days. No break for lunch, no nothing. Get there right after breakfast, stay there till after dark. And it is every 15 minutes. And these are not just lightweight speakers. These are a lot of the top podcasters, Mike Lindell, Eric Trump, General Flynn, Patriot Street Fighter. There was a Latinas for Trump. She was tremendous. She's running for Senate. Really, really outstanding fireball people. And, you know, we have years for different titles, you know, like we say, oh, this was the year of awakening, or this was the year of action, or this was the year of election. What we really saw down there was the year of revival, the year of revival, because it was kind of interspersed with evangelicals talking about not only how awake we are, and how independent we are in the sense that we're not going to kneel under the injections that have been forced upon us. None of these people down there have done that, or they haven't let on anyway. And they're fine. They're fine. Maybe a few sniffles here and there, but believe me, everything was fine. And it was great energy, great instruction, great spirit. Eric Trump assured us that his father is fully engaged. He's not out there on vacation. He is more like what we maintain he is, which is president of, in exile right now. Kim Clement's daughter appeared. Not only is she stunningly gorgeous, intelligent, an excellent speaker, but she's a great representation of her dad's empire. And she played about 25 minutes of prophecies that she had edited specifically for this event. So it wasn't something that some of which you had seen before, because Clement was just that kind of personality. He just had that once that droning keyboard sound and the drum support started, he would get into this, not a trance, but more of a vision. And it was interesting what he would use, the words he would use, because he would use, instead of words like Trump before he actually knew who the candidate was, he would use words like gold. He would use words like they would impeach and impeach, but he would not be impeached. And it was like, how could you know that? There was just no way you could know that. And he spoke of Melania and her eyes. He spoke of a lot of things. And I remember, of course, there's like, I don't know, so much you can't go over. You can't listen solid for a year and not hear everything. But I remember listening to one of the prophecies where he said that there would come a day when there would be two presidents, when we would not really know who was president. And I don't know if he was talking about Bush and Gore. I mean, that was kind of what we had thought because of 9/11, and we didn't really know who was president. And then we did. And then like 90 days later, we got our asses kicked, and then everybody was ready for it. Or should I say everybody was fired up for it, and we were all tricked, not only into flying American flags for the wrong reason, but we were also tricked into rallying around sending our middle-aged boys and girls to die in the Middle East. And we were happy about it, and we couldn't get it done, you know, quick enough. And, you know, 20 years later and a trillion something dollars later, we still did not have justice. And Trump was on the verge of delivering that justice when they removed him from office. Why? Because they saw what he was doing. I've told you the story a few times. I told you the day that it happened when Pelosi and Schiff wanted to go to the Middle East And they tried to get a military transport, and they couldn't get one. And Pelosi tried to get a private jet, and she couldn't get one. It was like a couple of months. Finally, the State Department moved a couple of obstacles out of the way, and they couldn't get packed fast enough. They left out of here. They flew to the Middle East because why? Because what happened was President Trump, during the Christmas holidays, had flown without announcing to anybody to Afghanistan. And he sat with the troops and he had Thanksgiving dinner with the troops, and no one knew a thing about it until the live feed turned on and showed him, you know, in the Air Force jumper there, you know, carving turkey and yucking it up with the guys. And the conversation that took place there, because he obviously, you know, after he got done circulating, because he always takes pictures with everybody who wants to do it, and it takes a while to do that, he sat with the generals that were in charge of the actual ground campaign there and maybe some of the low air campaign there. And he asked them, so I'm curious, why is this taking so long? And how much longer is it going to take? And a general, which President Trump calls Raisin Kane, obviously that is not his name, but we'll use the same name, General Raisin Kane. And President Trump said, so, you know, how much longer is it going to take? He said, 2 months. 2 months. And President Trump kind of chewed on his dressing a little bit there and said, wait a minute. You know, my generals at the Pentagon, they're telling me it's going to be 2 years minimum, and I just would like to get out of this. I'd like to be done with it. And the answer was, you're talking to the wrong generals. Well, I'm sure President Trump washed down the remaining food in his mouth and leaned over to him and said, if I move everything out of the way and put what you need in your hands, how long will it take? And Raisin Kane said, 2 months. We'll be done in 2 months. He said, consider it done. So then he gets back on the plane. He flies back to the U.S. and on his way, or as the engines are still cooling after he lands, he fires Mad Dog Mattis. He realizes Mattis has been lying to him, has been bleeding money out of the government for his military buddies. He's actually working a giant lobbying scheme to make his military buddies a lot of money. And he fires him. You're fired. He was gone in 24 hours. Raisin Kane finished the job in less than 2 months. That's when Pelosi and Schiff tried to make their way to the Middle East. They needed to keep this war going. They needed to have things remain as they were. And you remember when Trump decided, look, I think it's about time we moved our American troops out of harm's way. They're sitting there on the Turkish border. We got all these Turkish refugees. The Turks are sitting there. Syria is sitting there. Let's go ahead and withdraw our troops. Not withdraw. I used the wrong word. We're going to move them south past the Taco Bell. Okay? Just south out of harm's way, just past the Taco Bell. They'll still be in, you know, they'll still be there. They can still respond if anything gets crazy, but we're going to move them out of harm's way. Immediately, Pelosi and Schiff fly to Jordan. They have to talk to King Hussein. Gotta talk to King Hussein. They moved heaven and earth. And they flew a military jet, got all the way there. It's a long flight to get there. I mean, your ass is dragging even in business class. They get there and they go to King Hussein. Look, you've got to put those U.S. troops back in place. King Hussein said, nah, not going to do it. We support President Trump. He made the right move. So what happened? They panicked. Why? Because they had an asset in that alley. They had an asset that the Turks wanted to get to. And what was the asset? Well, it wasn't just a man. It happened to be all the drug storage, because, you know, ISIS used this kind of drug that's very popular in the Middle East. It's kind of like PCP. You take it and it jacks you up like PCP. You feel no pain. You feel no fatigue. You can fight like a banshee. And the enemies that they came upon were so afraid of these soldiers because they would be jacked up, wild-eyed, pupils dilated, you know, blood vessels bursting with energy, crazy when they came in, and they just killed everything in sight, and brutally so, that they would just take off their uniforms and they would run naked into the desert to get away from these people. The drugs came from this area in Syria, and the drugs were a super source of cash, drug cash. And the cash was both being funneled in and funneled out by the DNC. I'm just saying, I got the sauce, but let me get through what I'm getting through here. Not only, and one of the ways that these drug cartels maintain their protection to keep themselves from being offed and squeezed out of the way so they can't make a profit, is blackmail. They have the records. They have records of the phone conversations, records of the texts. They have pictures of McCain and people making the deals to put all this together, right? And that man that controlled all that was al-Baghdadi, the guy that they thought they had killed three times, and he kept popping back up. Oh my God, he's got the goods, and he's got the drugs, and he's got the money. But now the Turks are going to go in and overrun this place, and they're going to get all that evidence. And Pelosi and Schiff were absolutely panicking, absolutely pissing their pants with panic. So when Jordan would not put the troops back in place, they contacted a courier. In the Middle East, you don't pick up the phone and call anybody because everybody's listening. It doesn't matter if it's encrypted or whatnot. You don't send text messages. You don't send anything unless it goes by a courier. So they pull the courier in and they say, you got to get a message to Baghdadi. Now, I don't know what was in that message. It could have been something like, burn everything. Burn everything. Or it could have been, get the hell out of there. We'll buy you as much time as we can. Don't know what the message was. But I do know the message was on its way. And when the courier left, the special forces tracked him. Oh, yeah. They tracked him every step of the way. And the instant he ducked his head into al-Baghdadi's compound there on the edge of Syria on the Turkish border, they called the president. President Trump, we know where al-Baghdadi is. President Trump picked up the phone, called the necessary countries, and said, we're going to fly over the borders of your country. You're going to do nothing about it. You're going to say nothing about it. And if you do, some bad shit is going to happen. You understand? So those patrols left. Lights out. Low and fast. And they made it to al-Baghdadi. He kind of had a heads up. Even though they were as good as they were, special forces are what they are, SEAL teams are. What happened was, yes, McCain was a traitor. You're exactly right, James Bond, sitting out there on YouTube. What happened was al-Baghdadi had bomb vests. And what he did is he also had children as shields. He had, I think, 14 of them in this compound. So the women who were taking care of the children put on the vests. These are explosive vests. They got a splat. And their job is to stay close to the filing cabinets, because they figure that if the Americans come in, they can press the button, blow themselves up, probably injure or wipe out these kids, maybe get a couple of the Americans, but they will get all the records. And that's what Pelosi and Schiff were concerned about. Well, Special Forces was ready. They burst in the door. Bam! Bullets right in the forehead of the women. They couldn't get to the buttons in time. Mr. al-Baghdadi heard the dogs, and he said, oh, no, I'm not going to fall to no dogs. So he ran down his little rat hole tunnel, and the dogs followed, and he panicked when he got his way further and further down into the tunnel and realized he was in the wrong tunnel. There wasn't a way out. It was a dead end, and he decided to blow himself up. And there, in the silence, with the smoke settling in the end of the tunnel, as the Special Forces hunkered down with their armor on and hustled down that tunnel, to what end they had no idea. But they heard at the end of the tunnel was panting. And from the end of the tunnel you could hear, who's a good boy? Yes, al-Baghdadi was hamburger, and the dog was fine. So that night, which was a Friday night, President Trump comes on with an emergency press release announcement. Guess what we got? We got al-Baghdadi. Yeah, they thought they killed him three separate times, but this time we splatted him. He died like a whimpering dog at the end of the... Remember that? You remember the press release, right? And he said, I'll have some more information tomorrow. Well, Saturday morning, he did. Saturday morning was even better news. But because he said, you remember last night when I was telling you about al-Baghdadi? Yeah, and the little chase down, and then yes, and we got him, and the dog is fine, and guess what? We got all the records. We got all the records. We got all the intel. We got it all. That was Saturday. On Sunday, Pelosi and Schiff pulled their team together and filed impeachment charges against President Trump. That's the truth. That's the timeline. That's actually what happened. And somehow they got back into power. Now, you know, I don't know how long we've been going through this now, almost 5 years, this Russia bashing. It has now become a bipartisan activity in Washington, both parties. Now I call them the establishment party. They think that it makes them look really tough and pro-America, you know, to bash Russia. You can't go into Ukraine. You better pull those troops out of Kazakhstan. I mean, you know, you're being imperialistic, blah, blah, blah. But while the establishment party continues to one-up each other like dogs fighting over a pork chop to get to the microphone, on these so-called risk-free threats to Russia, they're increasing the risk every single hour toward nuclear war. Now, I'm not talking about nuclear war that spreads nuclear winter all over the planet. It doesn't have to be that way. Believe it or not, we've blown up about 2,600 and something of these things, and some of them have been really, really powerful, 20 megatons plus. And some of them have been small, half a megaton, 1 to 5 megatons. We can control them. We can tune them. We can aim them. We know what happens when they hit the ground. We know what happens when they blow up above the ground. We know what happens when they blow up in the water. We got practice. We got models. We have computers to figure this stuff out. We have all the data. There are actually generals out there who believe that a nuclear weapon or two in the right place at the right time would send a powerful enough message. You're going to stop what you're doing, or this is going to get way worse. And there's no retaliation here. We warned you 100 times. And it's all fun and games, Earth Explorers, until the missiles start flying. And they'll start out conventional, I'm sure. But in this case, when it comes to playing this Ukraine game, we're risking total destruction over who governs eastern Ukraine. And I got a question. You know, we have used nuclear weapons before in the battlefield. And Truman believed that the risk was worth it. Because we didn't have a way. We didn't have a way to win against Japan. There was just no way we could do it. They were too ruthless. There were too many of them. They controlled the tight, high ground, and they had better technology. We just couldn't stand another 3 or 4 years of that kind of war. So he ended it. He wrote the executive order. They dropped the 2 bombs, and that was the end of it. And it was probably the end of all war until the Korean police action. The issue with all this political tough talk, it fills up the bank account with all the donations from the donor classes and the bundlers. But the problem is that these politicians that are in the establishment party, they start believing their own rhetoric. I mean, all they have to do is listen to this program and we can straighten them out, but they won't. They end up believing their own crap. And as a result, they don't make sound decisions. They're speaking with a hangover. They make rash statements, bold and not very well thought through. So when U.S. politicians talk about Russia massing troops on the Ukrainian border, for example, they leave out data that you need in order to figure this out and know exactly what's going on. Because there are seasons for fighting over there, and this ain't it. This ain't it. They leave out that these troops are not in Ukraine. The troops are actually in Russia. The Russian troops are. And the U.S. troops have armies in 150 countries overseas. Russia doesn't. Russia doesn't. The U.S. does. You think Washington might pause before criticizing the aggression of Russian troops inside their own borders. But see, they don't think. They don't realize what they're saying. They also leave out the reasons why Russia might actually have those troops in that location in their own country. And why they might be concerned over this neighboring Ukraine, because it's not just Ukrainians there. It's Nazis there that are controlled by NATO. They have an SS on their shoulder. They carry heavy weapons. And we're not talking about just, you know, AK-47s here. We're talking about 20-millimeter cannons. We're talking about RPGs, pretty heavy weapons for street fighting. These Nazis are well-armed. And the Nazis also have Al-Qaeda, paid mercenaries, fighting on their behalf in the streets. And there's a couple other factions. You have the oligarchs, which are the age-old billionaires left over from World War II, the industrialists who made money on World War II. You know, they survived the war. They didn't surrender. They didn't surrender. They still owned their property. And when the USSR fell apart, they didn't lose their power. They gained their power because they no longer had the USSR to oppose them. They actually became area warlords. They owned the mines. They owned the forests. They owned the factories that made most of the heavy equipment. You know, Ukraine is a industrial powerhouse. And the third faction are communists. They're just peace-loving communists. They're Russians. Okay? They live in Ukraine. And almost all these people, with the exception of the Nazis, they speak Russian. They don't have a bone to pick with Russia. Now, of course, the American embassy does, and, you know, all of the people that joined the impeachment crowd to try to get rid of President Trump, they hate Russia. And, you know, they want to keep playing the money game in Ukraine because Ukraine is so corrupt, so full of, you know, warlords and shell corporations and non-profits that they can launder various governments' money through. And they've been doing it for 60 years, and they're not going to stop. That's where Biden made most of his money. He launders American taxpayer money through shell corporations in Ukraine. It feeds it back to businesses that he runs, that his son runs, and they pocket the money. And these gangs are addicted to money. Lots of it. And the other thing you have to realize is that there is a pile, not a metric, but tons of weapons sitting in Ukraine. There are bullets, there are machine guns, there are RPGs, tanks, helicopters, armored vehicles, thousands and thousands of them sitting in Ukraine. And guess what? Dutch and British and German and all these profiteers are grabbing up this gear and shipping it everywhere from Venezuela to South Africa to make money. And there's still weapons to go around. That's how prolific they were in this area. I mean, now, they also don't realize the flow of weapons we're talking about. We're talking about weapons in a quantity that made what was left in Afghanistan look like an oversight. I mean, imagine if China was sending $500 million in weapons to Antifa or to the drug cartels in Mexico, because they might reason in their mind, oh, well, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, and so they feed Chinese weapons to drug cartels, you know, to strengthen them, to embolden them, to kind of make them hyper-aggressive against a weakened U.S. regime. I mean, wouldn't we mass troops against the U.S. border? Wouldn't we? I think we would. If it was Trump, he would. He would make sure. Also, there's an issue about the U.S.-backed overthrow of the democratically elected Ukrainian government in 2014. We've gone over this many times. When Johns McCain and Kerry went in, started burning the crap out of the city to try to get rid of President Yanukovych, who was a Crimean, a Russian, a Crimean. Why? Because he wouldn't sign the bank deal with the Europeans. The Europeans tried to put Ukraine into a debt trap and destroy them that way. And Yanukovych was about to sign because they had him over a barrel. You know, you had a very extravagant lifestyle anyway. You know, Ukrainian men are as bad as Ukrainian women, or maybe worse. They are worse. And then Putin called him at the last minute and said, oh, hey, listen, Victor, don't sign the agreement with them, okay? Don't sign the agreement with them. Viktor Yanukovych, listen to me. This is what I am saying. You sign with me. I give you $5 billion, and I give you cheap gas. Cheap gas, and you'll be warm all winter, and you don't have no debt trap with the fucking Europeans. Okay? I'm sure that's what Putin was saying. I'm just quoting, okay? I'm channeling. And Viktor said, you know, this sounds very good, Boris. Very good to me. So this is what I'm going to do. And that pissed the McCain-Kerry gang off to no end. So they sent in operatives, and they started torching that city. You know, Antifa, you know, they didn't really have them in those days, but they had the same kind of activists. And they came in and started torching Kiev. And, of course, the police tried to hold the line and tried to stop the looting and tried to stop the shootings and, you know, all of that. But it went on for 5 or 6 weeks. Nobody was getting anywhere. The McCains and Kerry, they just couldn't get any traction. So they called up Miss Victoria Nuland. Yes, Victoria Nuland. And she went to the State Department and she said, I'm going to need some specialists. So she brought in her army, U.S. Army snipers, and put them on the rooftops above downtown Kiev. And then she sent her social workers in to work with the people, the middle class, the miners and the factory workers and the foundry workers. And they whipped them up, said, look, you guys have to get together as a kind of, you know, solidarity, a force. You got to group together, you know, put some metal on your, over your heads like shields. And you got to march up the streets protecting yourselves from overhead. And you've got to go after, and you got to take these cops on head on. You got to defeat them. And sure enough, they did try. Victoria Nuland's snipers assassinated over 100 innocent people in the streets, killed them, never made it 50 yards, killed them in the streets. And that's when they got the attention of the global community. That's when the outrage happened. That's when the violence got to the point where they were taking heavy equipment and they were going at them with heavy equipment against flamethrowers and machine guns. Oh, and they knocked one of them out. When they knocked one of the uniform guys out and he's lying on the ground unconscious and they reach over and grab him by his pant legs and pull him out of the fight and they go through his pockets. And what do they find? They find his CIA ID. There they were, right in the middle of it, stirring it all up. And now we see this conversation, this Ukraine game, ramping up again. Recent talks between the U.S. and Russia have failed before they ever began, with the U.S. side refusing to even consider ending useless and provocative NATO Nazi expansion eastward into Ukraine against Putin's wishes, because NATO itself is actually a Cold War relic, but it has been turned into a hot war asset. It should have been disbanded along with the Warsaw Pact. For those of you who don't remember that, what that is, I will cover that on another program. It serves zero purpose, none whatsoever. There is no threat whatsoever of the USSR attacking Europe. Now, is there? Hell no, there's no threat of the USSR attacking Europe. There is no need for NATO. It should not exist, but it does. And it's very powerful. And President Trump called them out. Of course, it had a lot to do with economics because they wouldn't pay their fair share of the support of NATO. And so a lot of things got to be straightened out. But how embarrassing is it for you to hear Blinken, okay? I think of a caution light flashing on one of those stupid sawhorses in the middle of a highway. Blinken, that's what he is. Today, wasting his time, wasting our time, ridiculing not the Nazis with NATO, ridiculing Putin for coming to the aid of ally Kazakhstan, who was being attacked by the CIA and MI6. I'll explain in just a little bit. I think one lesson in recent history, it's that once Russians are in your house, he said, it's sometimes very difficult to get them to leave. That's what he told them. I never had that problem. I had Russians working in my business, and I loved them. They were fantastic, hardworking, smart people. Loved them. I was sorry, so sad to see them go because their visas could not get extended by the U.S. That's what Blinken is telling reporters. That is so elementary. That is so laundromat. And he says it with a straight face, you know, like the U.S. is going to continue to illegally occupy a large part of Syria, blah, 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 continues to occupy part of Iraq against the will of that country's parliament and occupied a good part of Afghanistan for, what, 22, 23 years? How can he say that? Especially since it was the president of Kazakhstan, Tokarev, that asked Putin to send in the CSDP, to send in those troops to help. He said, you know, what do you do about Russia? Stop backing regime change along Russia's borders, including Belarus, Kazakhstan, and elsewhere. Stop meddling in foreign elections. I mean, look how we wasted 4 years on false claims that the Russians meddled in our elections. It's ridiculous. End weapons shipments and all aid to Ukraine. Stop it. End the sanctions. Get our boot off their neck and let them breathe. Reimagine the U.S. defense budget as a budget to actually, you know, defend the United States. Because we kind of need it, don't we? We're getting our asses kicked down there in Texas and Arizona. By the way, I was supposed to go down to the border with one of my former Special Forces buddies of mine. No, I was not in the Special Forces, but he was. I was supposed to go down there, visit the border on Sunday, and got a little bit under the weather, and I didn't want to expose him, and I didn't want to overtax myself because I had to be to work on Tuesday morning, and so I took a pass on it. But I'm going to go. I'm going to go back. I'm going to go to the border. I'm going to bring you footage of actually what's going on down there south of the Free Republic of Arizona. The point is that most of you remain blissfully unaware that our government, is making dramatic war preparations that the outbreak of hostilities with Russia may come literally at any moment. And I mean in just a couple of hours or a day, it could happen, okay? It could happen. Today, the U.S. Navy sortied, yeah, if you've ever been in the military, you know what a sortie is. A sortie is a war maneuver. It is where you take a plane, you load it with the pilot, load it with the crew, you load it with bombs, you give it a flight plan, you take off and you fly this route, okay? We call that route a sortie. That doesn't mean you're going to go drop your bombs, but you're going to go practice as though you were going to drop your bombs, okay? So a sortie could be a live event and it could be a practice event. The point is that the people that are flying it don't delineate between them, and they're graded by, you know, whether or not they're ready to pull the trigger. Okay, and if you work at a military base as a uniformed personnel, you know you'll do 50, 60 sorties a week. That's a lot. I don't mean you fly them, but you get the flights ready. You get the fuel and the Doppler antennas and everything sorted out. no pun intended. So when those planes take off, nothing goes wrong. Every communication works. Every turn is spot on. Every brake works. Every tire works. Every engine works at peak efficiency. All the instruments are accurate and repeatable. It's all graded. The Navy sorted 22 warships, and by the way, 4 nuclear submarines, today. Today. The USS Tripoli is an American-class amphibious assault ship. The USS Annapolis, nuclear attack submarine. They left San Diego yesterday. And these are just two. I've got a pretty much a list of every single naval vessel that was in the sorties today. They were dispatched from San Diego, California, Norfolk, Virginia, from Pearl Harbor, the USS Tripoli, the USS Curtis Wilbur, the USS Shoup, the USS Anchorage, let's see here, USS Wayne E. Meyer. Out of Virginia, we had the U.S. N.S. Medgar Evers. We had the U.S. Arlington, which is, by the way, an amphibious transport. And that means that you're transporting vehicles for assault, okay? Also, the USS Iwo Jima, which is a WASP-class amphibious assault ship. That also goes along with a ground assault. The USS Bataan is also a WASP-class assault ship, also leaving Norfolk on the East Coast. The USS Kearsarge, another WASP-class assault ship. The USS Gunston Hall, that's an island-class dock landing ship. These are for taking over and securing docks. They have loaded with special equipment to make sure ships can connect and offload. The USS Carter Hall, also a dock landing ship. USS James E. Williams, a guided missile destroyer. USS Forrest Sherman, guided missile destroyer, both leaving Norfolk. USS Mitscher, is a guided missile destroyer. That's three destroyers. There's a fourth one, the USS Gonzales. And then we have the USNS Arctic, which is the supply class. And this is a fast combat support ship. So that means that this carries bullets, grenades, armor plating, boots, I mean, all kinds of stuff to support combat in the field. USNS Joshua Humphreys, a replenishment oiler. An oiler carries weapons and fuel and food and water. If an oiler is hit by a weapon at sea, it will take 45 minutes for the water to fill in the hole it will leave in the water. An oiler is part of a carrier group, usually. The USNS Zeus, a repair ship. The Yorktown, the military sealift command oil chemical tanker, also a fueler. We have one, two, three, four nuclear submarines. Not going to give you the names of those. They're kind of rare, and I don't want to reveal anything. But listen, this is just the Navy. It's also today being moved in space, the XR-37B. It's also being moved in the air with air sorties, B-52s, B-1s, B-2s, all these vessels were sortied yesterday and today. That's the last 36 hours. It is no secret that tensions with Russia are extremely high, and talk of actual war within days is actually on the table. And when you have complete freaking idiots like Blinken and Biden in front of that button, it's got to be scary. It's got to be scary because they're making political overtures that are nothing short of fanatic, crazy. not well informed. And you got to remember that Ukraine is not a member of NATO. Ukraine doesn't get defended like this. They're not a member of NATO. If somebody attacks Ukraine, nobody is going to stand there and defend them except for Russia. Russia is going to defend Ukraine exactly the way they defended Kazakhstan, exactly the way they defended Crimea. Who was the aggressor? Was it Russia? Russia was asked to come in by the governments of Crimea and Kazakhstan. They were requested. Why? Because they didn't trust NATO. They didn't trust the Nazis. Now, given the number of amphibious assault ships, really the only place these could be used would be Crimea. Crimea sticks out into the Black Sea. It's not actually connected to Russia. It's connected to Ukraine. But it isn't really connected to Russia. There's kind of a ferry ride across the water. Kind of like, you know, Ireland isn't really connected to Scotland. There's a ferry between Belfast and Stranraer. And if you want to take the other ferry between Donabate, which is in the south part outside of Dublin, and it connects it to Wales. But there's open water, you know. It takes about 2.5 hours by ferry to get between them, which is kind of a pleasant ride, actually. But that makes it prime for, you know, amphibious assault. And Crimea is not set up to defend itself. But if not Crimea, where else might the U.S. be sending fully loaded amphibious assault ships? I'll throw out a name. How about Kaliningrad? Kaliningrad. Will the U.S. try to grab Kaliningrad to prevent Russia from placing missiles there against Europe? I don't think so. I think that's kind of a dumb idea. Whatever is taking place, though, it is abundantly clear that today's deployment of these warships, at the same time that all this, you know, bare genitals are being displayed, is too much of a coincidence, okay? Something wicked this way comes, okay? And I don't think it's going to be war with Russia. Russia is a gas station posing as a country. They have advanced weaponry, but they don't have enough. They don't have enough to sustain a war. They only have enough to take out one enemy. And you know what happens when these kinds of battles break out in history, right? For instance, what do you actually think would happen if China assaulted Taiwan? Anybody in the chat room venture a guess? What do you think would actually happen if this huge red thing you see on the map looked at that little teeny tiny shrimp of a island called Taiwan? What do you think would happen? Looks pretty easy, doesn't it? I mean, if you were playing a board game, you would say, oh, yeah, no problem, you know, like we'll take care of it this afternoon. Yeah, the problem is that, you know, Taiwan has the most sophisticated technology on the planet. They have the most sophisticated technology on the planet. They have ours, they have stuff they've bought from Russia, and they have stuff they have improved upon themselves because they're experts at microelectronics. And they have their own stuff. So you might think, oh, yes, it'll be very easy. We'll just fly over it a few times and, you know, we'll drop a couple of pamphlets and tell them what we're about to do in the next hour and everybody will surrender. Yes? Now, Baba Susie is saying, hey, she's calling bullshit. I am too. I think Taiwan would be very difficult to beat that way, even though they're very small. It's sort of like, you remember when the 300 Spartans, you know, stood against Agamemnon? You remember that? And you know why they were able to do that? I mean, you saw the movie, yes, of course. But why was that? Why do you think the Spartans were able to stop them? Yeah, because those forces had to go through a small little opening. Now, on the map, it looks like, no problem. We won't just march through. Boom, you know, Greece is ours. But as it would happen, because they couldn't get through the opening. And the more they tried, the more bodies they stacked in the way, and it got harder and harder and harder to do. The Chinese know they're going to have to put at least 200,000 troops on the ground in Taiwan to secure Taiwan. Unless they just want to nuke it. If they want to nuke it and just turn it into a desert island, I suppose they could do that. But I don't think that's what they have in mind. They didn't nuke Hong Kong for the very same reason. They wanted the money. They wanted the money. They wanted the money in the accounts. They wanted the banks. That's why they moved on it 25 years early. They wanted the money. They were broke. Donald Trump had broken China, and they needed the cash. And who was going to stop them? A bunch of college kids? Britain? They didn't care. They didn't stand and fight. We didn't defend them. We didn't do anything but mail them a few American flags and, you know, maybe the printed words to the Star Spangled Banner. But no, we didn't do anything. Taiwan would be a little bit different. In order to get 200,000 men from mainland China to Taiwan, you're going to have to take that 2.5-hour ferry ride. No, they don't have fast attack or fast amphibious assault ships. They don't own those. They would turn freighters, you know, the things that they stack shipping containers on top, they would turn those into troop transports. Hey, we'll come back in about 3 minutes. We'll finish this because I'm sure you want to hear this. This is today's news today, right here on America Free Radio, the Revolution Radio Network. We'll be right back.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Interested in the paranormal, murder mystery, real natural law? Do you enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crip Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crypt Ricks, I've been thinking. Welcome to the Crypt.
Join me at Revolution Radio, Studio B, at 11 a.m. on Saturday for Free Association, when we take a look at philosophy, spirituality, psychology, social issues and geopolitics. It's every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Studio B at freedomslips.com.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven. Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
That's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener-supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
All right. Having some fluoride-free, chlorine-free water filtered at my sink with a pure water filter. I got it at Walmart. I think I got it at Harris Teeter, actually. So listen, I wanted to get to the next level with this. We were talking about what would happen if China tried to make a move on Taiwan. I don't think it would be a good day, because you're going to take a bunch of freighter ships, container ships, which, by the way, don't have ramps in order to reach the ground. They're like 80 feet off the water when they're not heavy with shipping containers. And you have to make your way to the dock, and it's, you know, you could put like a net ladder over the side, and maybe you can scramble to the ground. I don't think the Taiwanese are going to offload those ships for you, not with their cranes. In fact, I think Taiwanese submarines, which are very, very quiet and very, very deadly, will sink every boat in the China Sea that you try to send over there. You're not landing any troops unless you fly them over and drop them from the sky, and heaven help them. Heaven help them. They'll be cut to pieces as they parachute to the ground. It won't be a good day for China. China has never won a battle outside its own country, ever. In thousands of years of fighting, China has never done it. They've fought amongst themselves, one dynasty, you know, against another, but even the Japanese, you know, readily, handily kicked their butt in World War II. So I can tell you there's a lot of equipment moving around. And it's not just what you see on trains and what you see going down the freeway. 2 hours ago, well, actually now it's been 3 hours ago. I'm trying to give the best up-to-date information I can. Our U.S. senators have said that they're actually working with the left on legislation to aid Ukraine. I don't know what it looks like. I can tell you that it's going to be a low-hanging fruit first, you know, blankets and cookies and cocoa, and then it's going to go from there. The senators didn't say when a unified bill could come to the floor of the Senate, which, by the way, has kind of a packed schedule because, you know, they just came back from the holidays. Senator Kevin Cramer earlier this week took part in a bipartisan visit of U.S. senators to Ukraine, said the bill should cut off Russia's access to SWIFT global electronic payment system. Putin doesn't care. He has his own electronic payment settlement system. You don't need SWIFT. SWIFT thinks they have a monopoly on it, but they don't. That's the truth. Russian legislators have called on Parliament in England to appeal to, you know, our the Parliament in Russia to appeal to President Vladimir Putin to recognize two pro-Russian breakaway regions in eastern Ukraine as independent states. This is kind of, you know, if you've ever owned a Doberman Pinscher, I've had friends that own them. They're a kind of ominous dog, especially if their ears have been trimmed. And they get quirky, you know. They get hard to predict in their old age. You don't know from one day to the next because you can't tell if they're happy or if they're pissed. You know, they cut their tail off, crop their ears, and make them look mean, right? And they are kind of a muscly kind of aggressive, kind of a black lab of a dog. I don't care about the cough. I'm going to keep going. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. I'm doing HCQ. I'm doing ivermectin. I feel like $100 million right now. Just have a little bit of a cough and wouldn't be coughing if I wasn't talking, but I'm going to keep talking. Can't make me be quiet. But a Doberman Pinscher can be easily distracted. So if they're trotting up to you, you don't know if they're going to take a bite out of you, jump on you, you don't know what. You could take a shop rag. As they get close to you, you could toss that rag in the air. And what they'll do is they'll be distracted. They'll grab that towel out of the air and maybe, you know, shake the stuffing out of it. Anyway, it distracts them. They're shaking the rag and not shaking your leg, right? That's a little bit what this is like. What these Russian senators are doing is they're asking Parliament to consider a request by these two regions to recognize them as independent states, you know, to kind of safeguard their residents from external threats. It's like tossing a rag up. It distracts everybody, distracts the dog. The draft revolution says this. The Russian state Duma turns to you, Vladimirovich Putin, with a request to consider the recognition by the Russian Federation of the Donetsk People's Republic and the Luhansk People's Republic as self-sufficient, sovereign and independent states. That's a close quote. It sounds reasonable to me. I know people in Donetsk. I know people in Luhansk. It sounds reasonable to me. Blinken, this is a few hours after this request was sent out, Blinken has once again opened his mouth and with a sort of cool hand, Luke, thinks that he's much more influential than he really is, look on his face. He actually threatened Moscow with, and I quote, massive consequences if the Russian side engages in further aggression against Ukraine. Further aggression? What the hell are you talking about? All the troops are in Russia, you stupid dick. I hope it doesn't, but should it come to that, we will act strongly in a coordinated manner to oppose those consequences on Russia. That's what Blinken said. The sanctions would have financial, economic, and export control components. You don't get this sense that there is a mass panic about it. There's no run to the supermarkets. People are going about their lives. Also, people do feel confident that this time the Ukrainian ministry is a lot stronger. It has received much training. They have done a lot of drills on this, a lot of sorties, as it were. It has received a lot of military hardware. Everybody's packing. It's in a better position now than it was when Johns, McCain, and Kerry, and Victoria Nuland did their attack on Kiev during the Obama administration. And then you have Canada. You know, Canada is weak, and they are as feckless as a fairy in a bar fight. Canada is working with international partners to make very clear to Russia that any further moves against Ukraine are absolutely unacceptable. That's what Justin Trudeau said. Absolutely unacceptable. Whatever. We are standing there with diplomatic responses. We're standing there with really tough sanctions, with a full press on the international stage to ensure that Russia respects the people of Ukraine, respects their choice to choose their governments, he told a briefing. Sounds like a lot of jaw flapping, right? I mean, I hear a lot of clucking here, but I don't see any eggs. There is nothing of substance here at all. So Putin turns around, and he doesn't meet tit for tat. You know, he's an asymmetrical fighter. This is sort of like you come into the ring and you cover up like this and you start jabbing, right, with your left jab. You think, oh, I'm going to knock this guy out. But instead, he turns around and kicks you in your calf muscle. And you go, what the, ow? That's asymmetric fighting. That's what Putin did. So when Tamara Rahimbayevka remembers seeing Fidel Castro almost 60 years ago, she gets full-on flush. I mean, her face lights up. Yeah, she ready. She ready. He was so young and handsome, a lion, the 79-year-old retired librarian said from the Russian capital with a nostalgic smile. We were all so happy to see him, she told the reporter, reminiscing about the jubilant crowds in central Moscow celebrating the Cuban leader's 1963 visit. He looked just like Trudeau. He looked just like Trudeau. Except he was the alpha male instead of the alpha bitch. Latin America in general and Cuba in particular were Red Moscow's darlings, right? They were the revolutionaries that managed to hold the ground. They started the revolution and they finished the revolution. They brought communism to Washington's backyard. Come on, it meant a lot in the Cold War days. And Cuba, known in the USSR as the Island of Freedom, it topped the Soviet charts. It was big, big popular. Feature and documentary films about Cuban revolutionaries were showing on nascent Soviet television and in packed movie theaters. Viva la Revolución. People spent hours in lines to buy Cuban oranges and Cuban cigars and bananas, rum. Oh, it was fashionable among the sophisticated Soviet youths of the 1960s. So, when Russia said 5 days ago that it could neither confirm nor exclude the deployment of Russian missiles to Cuba and Venezuela, to many Russians, the news was not just a threat. Mm-mm. It was a reminder of the USSR's military and political might, its confrontation with the United States and the collective West, and of course, the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis. Oh, yes. Remember that. Known in the former USSR as the Caribbean Missile Crisis. It made the world think for several almost endless weeks that nuclear war was imminent and it was unavoidable. The words of Deputy Foreign Minister Sergei Ryabkov that the deployment's possibility depends on the actions by our U.S. counterparts were also a practical response to Western pressure on Moscow. And the pressure really began after the Kremlin amassed 100,000 troops next to Ukraine and got ready. They didn't go, but they got ready, according to Western diplomats and a string of military experts, to invade the pro-Western ex-Soviet nation of Ukraine. You have to understand, though, you see, in this particular area of the Balkans, there's a season for everything. And I got to tell you, people, January ain't the season for fighting. No, it's the season to, you know, change the oil. Season to check everything, make sure everything's okay. March, April, that's the season of fighting. We're not there yet. And there are parallels with the Caribbean Missile Crisis. Ibor Romanenko, a retired lieutenant general and Ukraine's former deputy chief of staff, told the reporters. He said that the threat follows Moscow's old political stratagem. And it consists of, you know, an ultimatum. Actions and then dividends, right? It was tried and tested during the 62 crisis when USSR removed its nuclear weapons from Cuba in response to Washington's withdrawal of nuclear missiles from Turkey. But you see, in 62, we had John F. Kennedy. In 2022, we have Virtual Joe and his gang of criminals. Big difference. Big difference here. This time, the threat aims at getting a pledge from U.S., from Virtual Joe and his gang of criminals to leave Ukraine, or even the entire USSR, except for the Baltic states, in Russia's political orbit. And, you know, Biden is severely compromised here. He is very severely compromised. He is owned by Ukrainian oligarchs. He has been dealing in corrupt Russian money for a long, long time. He and Hillary Clinton steeped in the blood of Russian oligarchy and laundering of U.S. taxpayer funds and drug money. If they don't deploy the missiles, then there will be an agreement. Russia will have to get something, get Ukraine at a bargain price, or all the former Soviet republics, Romanenko said. But how feasible is the deployment, you know, even if it takes place, considering that Putin closed down a Soviet-era surveillance facility in Cuba in 2000 as he tried to appease the U.S.? To me, these ideas are really beyond reasonable. I can't believe that Virtual Joe is even considering it. But he is. When the USSR established military outposts in Cuba and Vietnam and Yemen, they were part of the Soviet military planning system that was a long time ago. But these days, when the Russian fleet is vastly reduced in size, it's like a tenth of its original size, a Russian military role to the fleet and reconnaissance efforts is not really there. These days, you know, a Russian military base in Latin America, it just doesn't have any role. You don't need it. Russia's little teeny tiny navy, just their little toehold in the northwestern Syria, that is all it takes to support Moscow's military presence in a war-torn nation and backs Russia's navy operations in the Mediterranean. And even if the Kremlin plans to open a base in, I don't know, let's say Sudan, it could also support that as well, right? The technology is way better than it was. But a base in another hemisphere, it just doesn't make any sense. It does not make any sense. The only thing one can imagine there is, you know, maybe a surveillance location, reconnaissance center, a space monitoring station or something. I mean, a Western analyst described the threat as nothing but propagandistic noise that has been coming out of Russia lately. Yeah, it is, but it keeps Virtual Joe and his gang of criminals and his stupid State Department checking their underwear for skid marks. Considering the costs involved, if this threat were to be carried out in a strategically relevant way and the relevant, relatively small contribution this would make to Russia's priorities in Ukraine, I believe it's a bluff. I believe it's a bluff. I don't think anybody should do anything about nothing. I wouldn't get rattled about it at all. You see, unlike the threatening noises regarding Ukraine, you see, that's local. When he tells NATO to back up, or I am going to kick your ass, he means it. The Kremlin fiercely denies it is planning to invade Ukraine. It is there to protect Ukraine from NATO. And believe me, NATO is the aggressor. NATO's the aggressor. What is that? Four-star Admiral Dr. Rachel Levine should take over negotiations. You think? I don't know. I don't know. I think I could do it. I could solve this in a matter of hours. Because I see through all the crap. Putin knows that Ukraine joining the U.S.-led transatlantic alliance, which is basically a debt trap, is exactly the wrong thing to do. It would be crossing the red line. It would be putting Russia on the endangered species list. And he has never stopped saying that Ukrainians and Russians are part of one nation. And he urged Kiev to make Russian the second official language. Yanukovych had no problem with it. He was Crimean and spoke Russian. No problem with it whatsoever. After the 2014, what they call the Revolution of Dignity, which is where Victoria Nuland did her massacre, it saw months of these fake protests. Toppling, you know, pro-Moscow Ukrainian President Viktor Yanukovych, who basically serves in exile in Crimea. Putin used the power vacuum to annex Crimea and back separatists in the southeastern provinces of Donetsk and Luhansk, and they're happy. They're happy with the terms. The rebels carved out two authoritarian people's republics. And they completely depend on Russia economically and politically. And to tell you the truth, much of Europe does as well. Okay, Latvia, Estonia, Poland, Belarus, a lot of these states that are freezing their butts off and they don't have natural gas. They have the pipeline that comes down through the Black Sea and through, you know, the connections there and feeds natural gas. And what the Europeans don't like is they have to pay for the natural gas with real money. Yeah, they have to pay with real money because, you know, the Russians are not in the fiat money system. You can't just print off euros and send them to Russia. They don't mean anything to them. They want real money. They want real dollars. They want gold. In fact, I think they're taking their payments in gold. Europe hates that. They don't want that. They want to steal the gas. And how can they do that? Yep, that's right. That's right. They send NATO over there, depose Putin, take over the country, put them under the, what did they just call this? I just read it to you. What is it? Transatlantic banking systems. Let's put them under that, and then we don't have to pay anything for the gas. We could just move ones and zeros around and pay for it. So today, Mr. Blinken, our Secretary of State, who's, I swear, reminds me of the sawhorse with the blinking yellow light, you know, that you put in the middle of the road to keep people from driving into the manhole. he arrived in Kiev to meet with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. Okay, this is the guy that was the comedian. He got elected. He liked Trump. Trump liked him. Everything was going well, and they had the perfect phone call. And then, of course, al-Baghdadi got popped, and Pelosi impeached him. And this was all faked. It was all faked. Why? Because they had to cover up Hillary Clinton's trail. They stepped over the Clinton blood trail so many times going into that basement to do circle jerks with Schiff. I can't believe it. They didn't track it all over the building. It was unbelievable. But they went to hold talks with Zelensky before holding talks with European diplomats and Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, which is going to happen later this week. I'm thinking not tomorrow, maybe Friday. Friday is the day. You watch for it in the news. Friday is the day that Blinken is going to try to meet with them, and they're going to basically horse laugh him out of the building. Blinken said this: "We know that there are plans in place to increase that Russian force even more on very short notice, and that gives President Putin the capacity, also on very short notice, to take further aggressive action against Ukraine. Mr. Blinken, I know you're listening to this program tonight, or one of your spies is listening to this program tonight. So I'm going to try to be very calm and very collective. I'm going to look you straight in the eye right here. Russia has taken no aggressive action against Ukraine yet. Just because they're standing toe-to-toe doesn't mean they're being aggressive. They're being defensive. What would you think, Mr. Blinken, if all 100,000 troops started up their equipment in the morning, drove across the frozen tundra back to Moscow, just like they're doing leaving Kazakhstan this weekend? What would you think? Of course, you would think, I won. I was tough. I backed him down. And that's exactly why he's not going to do it. You asshole. You're an idiot. You are an idiot. If you don't want Putin to be aggressive, don't try to punch him. It's as simple as that. So who are the players here? I mean, these players, the real players behind this, you think it's Blinken. It's not Blinken. You think it's Virtual Joe? Are you kidding me? the real players. Just like what happened, remember we talked about last Wednesday about the real causes of World War I and World War II? Who was doing that? Who was putting that together? Churchill, Roosevelt, they were the ones that planned it all. They were the ones that put the assets in place. They put the targets in place to be wasted at Pearl Harbor. They moved the good stuff out of the way because they knew they were going to use it later in the war. They blockaded Japan and forced them to attack. They put the Lusitania in place, and they put weapons on the boat and then leaked intel that there were weapons on the boat so that so that YouTube's U-boats would sink it. They planned it. They planned both World War I and World War II. 30 years of industrial rape. 85 million people died because Roosevelt stole the 1940 presidential election at the Chicago Convention. Had John Nance Garner won that convention, because he was the actual legitimate candidate, Roosevelt was not even on the freaking ballot. 85 million people would have lived. That's a big deal. We're sitting right here with the same players, and they have plenty of money. Even if everybody loses, they win. EurasiaNet, independent news organization that covers news from and about the South Caucasus and Central Asia, providing on-the-ground reporting and critical perspectives on the most important developments in the region. EurasiaNet is a tax-exempt 501c3. I wonder why. They're based at Columbia University's Harriman Institute. They're one of the leading centers in North America of scholarship on Eurasia. Guess who they're funded by? They're funded by Google. They're funded by Open Society Foundations. They're funded by the UK's Foreign Commonwealth and Development Office, the National Endowment for Democracy, the NED. I told you about it last Wednesday, didn't I? The NED. That's who went to war with the CSDP. Yeah. NED. It also should be noted that EurasiaNet is also funded by guess who? Yeah, the U.S. government through the National Endowment for Democracy, as well as the adjacent organizations like Open Society, George Soros, illustrating just how deeply Washington controls the global perceptions about the events. That's why you listen to America Free Radio, because I'm cutting through that blood so you can see it. I'm wiping the mud out of your eyes so you can see what is going on here. The National Endowment for Democracy is a private, nonprofit foundation dedicated to the growth and strengthening of democratic institutions around the world. That's what it says on their website. That's not what they're doing. They just tried to overthrow Kazakhstan. The NED is a CIA front. You recall me telling you about this other NGO known as Common Cause, right? Well, the NED, they're the really bad players. Common Cause just cheats at elections. The NED was set up by guess who? You'll never guess. I'm going to have to tell you. Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan set up the NED in 1980. And it was in the wake of the negative revelation about the CIA in the second half of the 1970s. We can't allow that. It was a remarkable period. It was scarred by Watergate, you know, the Church Committee of the Senate, the Pike Committee of the House, the Rockefeller Commission created by the president. These were not good days for the CIA, right? Had criminal contact, murder, drug running, human trafficking, rape, torture, tampering with elections, intimidating juries, killing judges. The CIA was mixed up in it for years. Kennedy wanted to get rid of it, scatter it to the winds. The agency was getting a bad name, and it was causing the powers that be a bad case of the red ass. And something had to be done. And what was done was not to stop doing the awful things. Hell no. We've got to keep doing those. What was done was to shift many of these awful things to a brand new organization with new funding. Yes. Yes, Google. Yes. Yes, open society. Yes, yes, that's what I'm... Let's make it at a university. We'll give it a nice-sounding name. The National Endowment for Democracy. Oh, yes. We'll redo our logo and everything. It'll be wonderful. And the idea was that the NED would do what the CIA had been doing covertly for decades, and thus hopefully eliminate the stigma associated with CIA covert activities. It was a masterpiece. It was a masterpiece of politics, of public relationships, and, of course, cynicism. And that's why America Free Radio broke this wide open, so you could see who these bastards are and what they're planning to do. It was in 1983 the National Endowment for Democracy was set up to support democratic institutions throughout the world through private non-governmental efforts. Notice the non-governmental. That makes it okay, right? We'll wipe it clean. Yes, we'll have no alcohol in this. We'll have nuns deliver the bagels. It was part of the image. It was part of the myth. Yes. In actuality, everything was soaked in blood. Virtually every penny of its funding comes from the taxpayer, comes from the federal government, comes from the same the same bloodlust that started the first two wars. So many death, so many dead people you cannot imagine. The financial statement in each issue of its annual report, I don't have time to go over it, but I'm going to give you the gist of it. The NED likes to refer to itself as an NGO. Yes, yes, we're a non-governmental organization. Yes, we wear tuxedos to most of our events. Because this helps, you know, to maintain a certain credibility abroad that an official U.S. government agency might not have, you know. But NGO is really the wrong category. Because the NED, the National Endowment for Democracy, is definitely a government organization. It might as well have planned World War I by putting the Lusitania in place, putting weapons upon it, putting innocent civilians on it, putting a press ship right behind it so they could film the entire thing, and then letting the Germans know that there were millions of rounds of ammunition on that boat and it must be sunk, or German boys and girls will die. And they did, and they sunk it. And it was the sinking of the Lusitania that started the whole ball rolling, and Churchill loved every minute of it. Carl Gershman, 1986, said we should not have to do this kind of work covertly. You know, it would be terrible for democratic groups around the world to be seen as subsidized by the CIA. I mean, we saw that in the 60s, and that's why it had to be discontinued. Not the killing, not the raping, not the blood, not the drugs. No, the CIA funding. Now the CIA funds movies. Now the CIA funds bioweapons. Now the CIA funds the 23andMe operations. Yes, those kinds of things. and Alan Weinstein, who helped draft the legislation establishing the National Endowment for Democracy. He declared in 1991, a lot of what we do today was done covertly 25 years ago by the CIA. You know it. I know it. We're doing the same thing. We're pulling the same trigger. We're stabbing the same people. We're selling the same children. We're the good old CIA with a different name. It has four principal initial recipients of the funds. Would you like to know who they are? The International Republican Institute. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The National Democratic Institute for International Affairs. Yeah, both parties. The establishment party, you know. The AFL-CIO. Yes. And the American Center for International Labor Solidarity. And an affiliate of the Chamber of Commerce. Yeah. Center for International Private Enterprise. These institutions. Oh, I got another one for you. The World Wildlife Federation. You know what I'm talking about? The one with the little lion, and you know, and you see the sticker. Oh, it's great. We'll get it at the zoo, baby. And you can put it on your little Barbie car. It'll be so cool. These institutions then disperse funds to other institutions. And they disperse funds to other institutions, not only in the U.S., but all over the world. And then they kill. And then they steal technology. And then they surveil and spy. The NED programs generally impart the basic philosophy that working people and other citizens, they're best served by a system of free enterprise, class cooperation, collective bargaining, unions, minimal governmental intervention in the economy, and opposition to socialism in any shape or form. Liars. A free market economy is equated with democracy, reform, and growth. Liar. And the merits of foreign investment in their economy are emphasized. Liar. Liar. Talk to the people in South Africa. I did today. Today's Wednesday. I spoke to people. No, that's not what's happening. They're being stripped of their rights. They're being forced into lockdown. Only selected businesses are allowed to stay in business. And from 94 to 96, the NED awarded 15 grants. It wasn't much. It was only worth $2.5 million. The American Institute for Free Labor Development, a communist organization used by the CIA for decades to subvert progressive labor unions. The third world unions, they use those to apply considerable educational effort in every similar effort to basic NED philosophy described above. Let's see. There was one I was looking for here. The NED has funded centrist and rightist labor organizations to help them oppose those unions which were too militantly pro-worker. This has taken place in France, Portugal, Spain, among other places. In France, during 1983 and 4 period, NED supported a trade union-like organization for professors and students to counter left-wing organizations of professors. You see, the thing you have to understand here is that left and right mean different things in Europe than they do here. Okay? The right in those areas are not necessarily the good people. They're more radical in the sense that they believe in a collective force. The left is more liberal. And basically, I'm liberal in the sense that I don't want anybody telling me what to do. I believe in freedom. I believe in freedom and liberty. liberty is what liberal means. I don't want to be classed like everybody else because I'm not like anybody else. I don't want to have their name. I don't want to wear the same clothes as them. I don't want to drive the same car as them. I want my motorcycle to look different than their motorcycles. I want my books to read differently. I want my music to sound differently. And I think yours should too. So what is the NED doing? What are they doing right now in America? What have they been doing for the last 2 years? The NED's Statement of Principles and Objectives, by the way, they were adopted in 1984. It basically says this. No endowment funds may be used to finance the campaigns of candidates for public office. Really. But there are ways to circumvent this, you know. Because there's hard money and then there's soft money. And as described in the elections and interventions chapters, NED successfully manipulates elections in, they manipulated elections in Nicaragua, Mongolia. They helped to overthrow the democratically elected governments in Bulgaria in 1990, Albania in 1991 and 1992. They worked to defeat the candidate for prime minister in Slovakia in 2002. From 99 to 2004, they funded members of the opposition to President Hugo Chavez in Venezuela to subvert his rule and to support a referendum to unseat him. And by the way, who's running that now? Right. Somebody way worse. In addition, in the 1990s and afterwards, NED supported a coalition of groups in Haiti. Yes, Haiti. And they were known as the Democratic Convergence. And they were united in their opposition to Jean-Bertrand Aristide and his progressive ideology while he was in and out of the office of president. And the NED also had made its weight felt in the electoral political processes in numerous other countries, including the United States. They maintain that it is engaged in opposition building and encouraging pluralism. We support people who otherwise do not have a voice in their political system. Oh, I see. Like illegals. Yeah. Like people who are not the majority in this country. Yes, I see. Yes, their voice. I gotcha. They haven't provided aid to foster progressivism or leftist opposition in Mexico, El Salvador, Guatemala, Nicaragua, Eastern Europe, or for that matter, in the United States. Really. Even though these groups are hard-pressed for funds and to make themselves heard, Cuban dissident groups and media are heavily supported, however. NED's reports carry on and on and on about democracy, but at best, it's modest measure of mechanical political democracy. It's socialism, which is basically the fuzzy dice on the communist tanks. The endowment played an important role in the Iran-Contra affair. They also mounted a multi-level campaign to fight the leftist insurgency in the Philippines. And between 1990 and 1992, the endowment donated $250,000 of taxpayer money to the Cuban American National Foundation, the ultra-fanatic anti-Castro Miami group. It got 73 people killed in 1997. Yeah. The NED, like its CIA parents, calls what it does supporting democracy. The governments and movements whom the NED targets, they call it, it's destabilization. It's a very shrimp cocktail kind of word, destabilization. And by the way, they do it inside the U.S. too. They do it in California. They do it in North Carolina. They do it in New York. They do it in Florida. They do it in Texas. And they were doing it this weekend in Arizona. And what is that about? Defending the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic? Well, now you have a name, Earth Explorers. And what are you going to do about it? I saw Mark Fincham again a couple days ago. And, you know, I wasn't as friendly as I was the first time I met him in Vegas. When I asked him the question, I was 6 feet away from him, and there were 200 witnesses. I was at the microphone. He was sitting on a chair with a microphone. And I said, you know, it is written that justice denied is war, and justice delayed is justice denied. So we, the people, want to know who is going to administer justice and when. And he scooted a little bit on his stool, and he said, well, you know, Mark Brnovich, he's the attorney general of Arizona, and I really trust him. I think he's going to go after him. I think he's going to make some arrests, and it's going to be very public, and some of it's going to turn heads. And Wendy Rogers was quick to back him up. I gave him the benefit of the doubt. I wasn't there to debate them. I just wanted them to say it. I wanted them to put it on record. I wanted to not get up there and filibuster a question. I said it. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a king in this country. We do. We have had for over 200 years. The king is the law. The king is the law. And everyone is subject to that law. Just because you're a non-citizen living in this country doesn't mean you're not subject to that law. You are. You are. And you could be deported by not obeying it. But if you're elected as an official, you're still subject to the law. If you have a job or no job, you have money or not money, you're still subject to the law. Equal justice under the law. You kill a man, I kill a man, we get the same punishment. You cheat your business, I cheat my business, we get the same punishment. You don't get away with it, while I don't. And if you're a bank and you say, well, you know, I really think you've been so productive the last 21 years, but you have about $3,600 in the bank right now, and I think we're just going to take it. Yes. And by the way, you can't write any more checks, and please take PayPal off all of your websites. Don't put it on YouTube either. No more donations, none of that. We'll see you in 6 months. We may give you your money back, but I wouldn't count on it. Just forget you even had it. Oh, yeah. And we heard about on Lucky's program tonight, other people, 20,000 here, 25,000 there, 60,000 there. It doesn't matter to them. They just take it for no reason. They don't have to give a reason. You know why? Because we don't have equal justice under the law. We don't have equal justice under the law. So I said, gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, we have a king. And it is called the law. And what we want is justice under that law. So will you please stop the investigations and arrest somebody? Arrest everybody. Put them all on trial and let the innocent walk away. Let them present their evidence. But they need to spend their money to defend themselves, because they are the ones that stole the election. And every single day that we let this go on, we see the NED inching us closer and closer to nuclear war, because it's what they want. It's their plan. It's their strategy. It's what they do. And we're not going to let that happen. I don't know what we can do about it. But now that everyone listening to this program tonight knows this, and they see our government moving 22 sortied naval vessels today. That's a lot of armor, people. That's a major, major offensive. That's Battle of the Bulge shit. Let's not play this game. Please, please go out and look for the good in others and help it to grow a little every day. Let's save this planet. Let's save this republic. Please back those political candidates that will throw these bastards out of office. I would not vote Democrat if they forced me. I think they all should be removed from office. Every single one that's running should be removed. All of them. Remove the Democrat Party from the list. You think we're going to be a one-party system? Never. Never going to happen. Once the DNC is bankrupted, there'll be four or five other parties pop up. There'll be the Patriot Party. There'll be the Constitution Party. We'll see the Tea Party. We'll see the Freedom Caucus. I think all of these are wonderful. The Founding Fathers feared a two-party system. Please, God, save our republic. And may justice be done. Remember, everything you do will eventually affect the universe. So do it on purpose. By the way, I started with my journal today, writing my 2022 goals. Oh, they're aggressive. They're aggressive. Show up to class this Saturday. We'll go over them, and we'll go over yours too. We'll see you on Sunday night. On America Free Radio. My name is Brooks Agnew. I've been your host for the last 2 hours. Pardon the coughing, but I have a goal. One of my targets. I'm not going to miss a Wednesday for the entire year of 2022. You have my word. It'll be really bad if I don't show up. Okay? Peace, Earth Explorers. Now go and do.
Officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Look, you stupid bastard. You've got no arms left.
Yes, I have. Look.
It's just a flesh wound.
I don't believe I've seen such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, stupidity.
I'll do you for that.
Oh, what?
Come here. What are you going to do, bleed on me? I'm invincible!
You're a loony.
The Black Knight always triumphs!
Roundtable Live, Monday through Friday, 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Eastern Time. Bring your mind, bring your ideas, bring your voice. King Arthur had nothing on us. Here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com.
Hi everybody, it's me, the Fetch, host of Inside the Eye Live. Before the Sunday mainstream media political pundit talk shows, there is Inside the Eye Live, where we break down some of the weekly mainstream media talking points before the talking points even get aired. Add in some entertaining stories, weather, cats, intriguing, and informative guests, and you get one of the most listened to Saturday morning streaming media political talk shows going today. And it's all right here on our flagship station, Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. So join me, the Fetch, for Inside the Eye Live every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock a.m.